Good afternoon and welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. Well, if you know someone who has severe emotional swings, blames others for all of their problems, does and says extreme things when angry or backed into a corner, then you're likely engaged in a relationship with a high conflict person. In his new book, The Five Types of People Who Can Ruin Your Life, high conflict expert Bill Eddy examines the five most common personality disorders and expertly examines how high conflict people think, what motivates them to act in such extreme ways, and how you can protect yourself from becoming their next target. On today's program, Bill Eddy joins us to discuss how to identify the warning signs of five high conflict personality types and will share his tips and tools for how to safely engage in and manage relationships with high conflict people. Bill Eddy is a lawyer, a mediator, and a licensed clinical social worker. So he has a unique perspective on this from several different angles. He is the founder of the High Conflict Institute in San Diego, California, is a faculty member at the Pepperdine University School of Law, and has authored a number of books on high conflict people and how to manage them. Welcome, Bill. I appreciate you taking the time to join us again today.
Thank you so much, Prentice. I'm glad to be on.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. I saw you down at the Evolution of Psychotherapy conference, and I lined up a lot of people, but we ran into each other and decided to do this again. It's hard to believe, Bill, that was 3 years ago, three and a half almost, that we had a discussion about high conflict people.
They're still around.
Yeah, and they're not going away. So please stay with us for the next hour, and feel free to give us a call with any questions or comments you have for Bill about high conflict people, personality disorders, and we'll get you on the air, and Bill can get those answered for you. You can call us locally at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. Or you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. All right. Well, we mentioned you're at the High Conflict Institute in San Diego. Can you talk a little bit about your background? What on earth makes you want to do this really, really challenging work? And I guess how do you do that over the 30 plus? I don't know how many years you've been doing it, but what are you guys doing down there, and how do you do it so well?
Well, basically, we're doing it all over. So High Conflict Institute is based in San Diego, co-founded by myself and Megan Hunter, who's actually in Arizona. But we both worked with a lot of high-conflict divorce situations. She worked for the Arizona Supreme Court, setting up training for their judges. And I worked as a family lawyer in San Diego after 12 years as a therapist. So it's when I moved into law and I wanted to use counseling methods to help people stay out of court when they get divorced and stuff. So I became a lawyer, but I quickly realized I'm dealing with the same types of problems, but they're not recognized. So what I used to deal with in a psychiatric hospital, outpatient counseling, now I was dealing with in a courtroom, and the judge just didn't get it. The other lawyers didn't get it. The parents that I was trying to help didn't get it. So I kind of started getting into an educational mode with this. But you're right, it's actually been 30 years because I started as a therapist over 30 years ago, then became a lawyer, then realized there's a pattern to people's high conflict behavior, and I want to help people deal with it, but also, you know, maybe don't get married to someone that's going to give you a high conflict divorce. So that's where it started.
I don't know many people that made the transition from therapist to lawyer. What sort of motivated that? It's a strange shift, seems like to me.
Well, yeah, and it is unusual. What happened for me is I got involved with a community mediation center, mediating conflicts between neighbors, between small business owners and their customers, sometimes landlord-tenant disputes, sometimes community police types of disputes, teacher, et cetera. And I really liked mediation because it was like using counseling tools to solve conflicts and legal problems sometimes. So I decided I wanted to make a career of that. And I saw that there were no jobs, and this is like 25 years ago, not really jobs in mediation, but that lawyers were starting to do mediation and getting paid for it. So I decided, okay, I'll become a lawyer primarily to do mediation. But when I was in law school, I realized I really enjoyed the thinking process of law and that I also needed some legal experience to be able to tell my mediation clients what going to court looked like. So I figured I'll go to court for 2 years, represent clients there, learn how things work. And 15 years later, I stopped going to court and just do mediation now. But what happened is I saw that so many of today's conflicts aren't really about issues. They're really about personalities who aren't good at solving conflicts. And you solve one conflict and boom, they pop up with another one.
All right. So, yeah, it's not about the specific thing. It doesn't matter what it is. They'll find something to be in conflict about because that's how it is. That's how it needs to be. So can we talk a little bit about your new book with that in mind, The Five Types of People Who Can Ruin Your Life? The title's pretty heavy, but what was the sort of motivation for writing this book? I've read quite a few of your books, all very informative and helpful and understanding. But what's your new book? What makes it a little bit different? What's the spin here?
Well, a couple things about it. One is I'm at a point in my career after 30 years helping people get out of or manage high conflict situations. And now I want to help people not get into those situations, if possible, or manage them earlier on. And so I wrote this book partly to help people identify, and that's part of the subtitle, is identifying people with these high conflict personalities and then dealing with them. Because what happens is people are caught by surprise and they generally do the opposite of what they should do. They overreact emotionally, they blame them back, they get stuck arguing over the past and who's telling the truth, et cetera, when they really need to focus forward. And so this book emphasizes identifying high conflict personalities, but also dealing with them in a positive way. And I feel like at this point in my career, I want to get that to more people. So I think I simplified it and gave a lot of examples and made it a little bit shorter and faster. Because people need this information usually all at once. We used to get people saying,
right,
can you get me the book tonight? You know, but now we can because of, you know, e-books and all of that.
Yeah, this book is very simple to read. It's easy to understand. It's interesting. It has some great case studies and examples and kind of gives you a picture. But for our listeners, let's talk a little bit about defining the high conflict person. I mean, what does that mean exactly? And discuss a little bit about, you mentioned the personality types, and we use the dreaded word narcissism, borderline. So talk a little bit about what a high conflict person is and what are these five personality types, just some of those characteristics.
Sure. So first of all, high conflict personalities, that's what I recognize dealing with legal disputes. And there's four key characteristics. These are people who are stuck blaming other people, what I call their targets of blame. And then they're preoccupied with that. It becomes almost their life's purpose to attack this other person. And, of course, I've seen that in a lot of high-conflict divorces. But I also now do seminars and consulting in the workplace because people are saying, we've got somebody like that at work. Or maybe it's the business owner. We can't fire the business owner. Is there a way to deal with them? And so I'll tell people how they can deal with and manage these personalities. So blame is number one. Number two is a lot of all or nothing thinking. They see solutions like my way or the highway. You know, it's all your fault. It's not my fault. The third is intense emotions, and often their emotions just pull them way off track. They get stuck reacting to things and talking about the past. Their emotions kind of boss them around in some ways, and they can't seem to help themselves. And the fourth is extreme behaviors, that what we find is they'll do things 90% of people would never do. They'll quickly make an excuse But if you ignore all the excuses and just focus on the behavior and say, would 90% of people have ever done that? You know, punching a hole in the wall, screaming at their boss in a staff meeting, things that are really going to hurt them that they can't seem to control. So these extreme behaviors. So it's preoccupation with blaming others, all or nothing thinking, unmanaged emotions, and extreme behaviors. That's the high conflict personality type.
Yeah, David Burns would call those cognitive distortions or extortions, right, in the case of the personality disorder. But cognitive distortions, those thinking errors, the globalization, the catastrophizing everything. You're the worst person in the world. You're the best person in the world. I love you. I hate you. Don't leave me. That kind of that's the borderline stuff. But can you, I guess, talk a little bit about, and narcissism and borderline are the two most well-known. So I guess start maybe with those.
Yeah. So those are both personalities, which in the extreme are personality disorders. There's 10 personality disorders mental health professionals have identified and listed in their diagnostic manual. 5 of those have a tendency to be high conflict personalities with the characteristics I just described. But not all people with personality disorders, or even these 5, is a high conflict person because they don't focus on blaming a specific person. So let me talk briefly about those. So narcissistic, people are most familiar with narcissistic.
Right.
And narcissistic basically see themselves as very superior, and that's why they get into a lot of conflicts. They insult, humiliate, mislead other people. They lack empathy. And they're pretty arrogant and obnoxious. They do a lot of insulting of others, but if you insult them, they can't handle it. And they just do it even worse. Borderlines basically have wide mood swings. And so they're kind of on the border between love and hate. At least it seems that way.
Hmm.
And so some of them are high conflict people, and some of them aren't. Some of them just kind of blame the universe for their frustrations. But if they're someone, let's say you're in a love relationship with someone with this personality, it can feel like a roller coaster, and then you feel like they're punching back. And sometimes it is physical, although not always. Now, there's 3 others I just want to mention. Antisocial, also known as sociopath, and these are the con artists. By the way, these can be extremely charismatic people, but then they will stab you in the back, take all your money, maybe even take your life. They're extreme. Paranoid people, the ones that think you're out to get them, then that can be another high conflict situation. But some people are just super paranoid and not having a target. Histrionics, people who are very emotional, dramatic, make up stories, just, you know, everything's just so overwhelming, it's so distracting, etc. So all 5 of these personality disorders may be high conflict people or might not be, and some people who are high conflict people with a target of blame may just have some traits of this but not actually have personality disorders. So it's important not to make judgments, assumptions, and probably the most important message in this whole show is don't tell somebody you think they have a high conflict personality or personality disorder. That'll just make your life much, much worse.
People are throwing around the word narcissist. I hear it in my office a lot. You know, the wife calls the husband a narcissist, and the husband calls the wife borderline. And there's all these terms being thrown around. But percentage-wise, I mean, the statistics, what do they indicate about how many true personality disordered folks are running or walking around in the general population?
Well, there was a big study done about 15 years ago. It was the biggest study that was done, and they said there's about 15% of the U.S. population has these kinds of characteristics, have these personality disorders. Now, if you think about it, that's huge. So if we're a country of over 3 million people, you're talking about 300 million people. We're talking about 45 million people or so. That means everybody knows somebody like this.
Right.
And it means some people are somebody like this. And I have a lot of compassion for them because they mostly don't realize how they're sabotaging themselves. And some get help. Most of them, because they don't realize their part, don't get help and just stay stuck in these patterns. But about 15%, and if you think about it, that's similar to the percent of people with a alcoholism or a substance abuse addiction. So we're talking about a large problem that's by and large not recognized.
Yeah, and when thinking about the percentages, you talked about how high conflict people are not necessarily personality disorders, and people with personality disorders are not high conflict people. The distinction, you said, is the targets of blame. And there's a whole chapter in your book about the targets of blame. Many people with personality disorders are just really helpless, hopeless, sort of wallowing around in their own misery and don't, you know, do the target of blame. But that really seems to be the distinction. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's the key. I mean, personality disorders on the whole, the key characteristics are they lack self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there's three things that they have: relationship trouble, social impairment, it's called, and internal distress. Then they lack self-awareness, so they don't see their part in these relationship problems. And this could be any relationship, neighbor, workplace, love, et cetera. And the third is so they don't change. So they're stuck. They're stuck in normal human behavior, but they're abnormally stuck. And so they just keep having mood swings or keep being self-centered. They keep blaming other people. So they're stuck in their pattern of behavior. And it's actually easier to recognize these folks because they're not as flexible as most people. They keep doing the same self-sabotaging thing over and over and over again. So that's what distinguishes them. And it's really rather sad because it not only hurts the people around them, it hurts them too.
I'd like to look, go back just for a second. You said the word compassion, and there's a section in your book that talks about having compassion for people who struggle with personality disorders or high conflict. That's a shift, and you know, one of it's a therapeutic tool to, you know, have what is it in the Bible? It's pray for your, you know, your enemy, or forgiveness is a big one, and having compassion for people who struggle. You know, I heard a quote once that said the people who are the hardest to love are the ones who need it the most. And that's what I think about, you know, borderlines, narcissists. They're really people trying to work something out. It's not like, I guess antisocials, a lot of times the lack of empathy, but borderlines feel things at a pretty intense level. And I have a lot of compassion for that.
Yeah, it's really very sad. And mm-hmm. and they don't choose to have these problems. Some of it may be hereditary. Some of it's abusive early childhood. Some of it's what they absorb from the culture. And that combination has influenced some people. So I think of about 10% of people as the high conflict personalities who can ruin your life. That it's a sizable percent. And they're stuck. And so I've had clients like this. I've had them as a therapist. I've had them as a lawyer. I've had them in mediation. And you're right. They are suffering. The big problem is they have a huge mistake as to where the problem lies. If they could look at themselves, try some new behaviors, be a little less aggressive about everybody else, they probably would be a lot happier. But that's where they're stuck.
I hear all the time people with personality disorders can't change because they lack insight. But I know that's not necessarily true. Change is hard, deeply ingrained personality disorders. But, you know, is your experience that people can change if they really work at it?
It's yes. And it's a continuum. So
right.
Some people have traits. Some people have disorders. Some are really, really severe disorders. But yes, so say borderline personality disorder, that people are becoming more aware. Some people that have that are becoming aware of that and getting to work on themselves. And there's therapists trained to help people work with that. So in many ways, that's perhaps the most optimistic and hopeful. But that's a small percent that say, I want help with this. Narcissistic personality disorder, histrionic, paranoid, those are ones that could make progress in therapy if they were to get into therapy. Very few of those get into therapy, and they need a therapist that knows how to work with them. Just purely supportive therapy often Right. reinforces their negative behavior. So it's got to be someone that can balance support with confronting behavior change. Now, the one I left out is antisocial, and that is the hardest Yes. and perhaps not possible to change.
Okay, we're at the 20-minute mark in our show, so we're going to need to take a short break. For those of you who might be tuning in late, my guest today is high conflict expert Bill Eddy. Bill is a licensed therapist, an attorney, and a mediator trained in dealing with high conflict people in a variety of settings. Today, we are discussing his new book, Five Types of People Who Can Ruin Your Life, and are looking at how to identify the five personality types of high conflict people and how you can either avoid or manage relationships with these folks in your life. As always, you can reach us with your questions or comments in one of three ways. Our local phone number is 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752 or email your questions or comments to line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we will return to our conversation with Bill Eddy. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
Listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. For those of you who might be just tuning in, my guest today is high conflict expert Bill Eddy. Bill is a therapist, an attorney, and a mediator who teaches and trains professionals really all over the world specific strategies for recognizing and dealing with high conflict people. Today we are discussing his new book, The Five Types of People Who Can Ruin Your Life, and are looking at how to identify the personality types of high conflict people and how you can avoid or manage your interactions with these people so as to protect yourself and get through whatever situation it is. As always, we welcome your questions or comments. If you have a story or a situation that you want to run by Bill or a comment about our subject today, you can reach us at our local number, 550-8433. You can get us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752, and you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org, and we'll get you on the air with Bill. All right, before we talked a little bit about the types of high conflict folks, the personality types, and I wanted to get into, like, you say it's pretty easy to see. But is it one of those things when you look back on the 5 years that you spent doing that, you're like, oh, obviously that was clearly going on? Or is it something that you can see ahead of time? And you're talking about preventative stuff, right?
Right. I want to say it's often not easy to see at the beginning.
Okay.
And so
beginning, that's right?
Yeah. The beginning. And so what happens is high conflict people often come on with a sugar coating. They're super nice, super reasonable.
You mentioned the charm and the charisma, right?
Exactly. It's kind of like a sugar-coated personality, and the sugar wears off. Like if you're in a romantic relationship, it sometimes takes 6 to 12 months for the sugar to wear off, and then maybe there's physical abuse, maybe there's yelling, blaming, throwing, maybe there's stealing from you, all these things don't show up right at the beginning a lot of the time. However, the characteristics I talk about, sometimes there's hints of these. Like if you have someone who's preoccupied with blaming other people, like you're watching a TV show, you're curled up on the couch and you're seeing something in the news and your new partner says, oh, that person, people like that don't deserve to live, you know, or people like that are just insane or evil or whatever. And if you start to see a pattern like that, you might predict that that's going to come around to you someday because they have targets of blame. If they come back, say, somebody at work just really was the most evil person you've ever met, and they describe something where maybe it was a minor insult or an omission, it's just way out of proportion, that's often a sign, too, that you're dealing with someone that may have one of these personalities. So there could be some early warning signs, but it's also good to know that you might be caught by surprise. If you're hiring somebody or you're thinking of taking a job somewhere, it's good to do a little background research, and it's amazing what you can find just Googling somebody or just looking at criminal records in the court system in your city. It's just amazing what people can find out. So sometimes you have hints, but often you don't see it for a while.
Yeah, you mentioned, I want to go back to the 90% rule so people understand that specifically, because it's a really good one. Like if you're at a restaurant with somebody and they're berating the wait staff because their food is too cold and bullying people around, and you're thinking to yourself, and that's where you ask yourself the question, would 9 out of 10 people think this is okay? I mean, that's an important question to be able to ask yourself.
Exactly. And first of all, ask yourself if you would do that.
Would I do that?
Because, yeah, would I do that? And people go, well, I would never do that. But maybe a lot of people do that. Like, does anybody lie? Okay, we know everybody lies to some extent to some people. So
That's
not a 90% thing. But like when you said, if someone's screaming in a restaurant, someone's just doing behavior, it grabs your attention. You go, my goodness, what made them do that? That's the wrong question. Would 90% of people do that? In other words, I've seen people say—
Yeah, not why would you act that way, right?
Yeah. They say, well, I was tired, you know.
Right.
I don't, you know, usually punch a hole in the wall, but I was tired, you know.
I don't usually assault children.
Yeah. There's one case we read about is astonishing to me. A woman didn't get the house she wanted in a lottery for a development, and a young couple got the house. And so she thought, I guess, that maybe she could drive them out. So she advertised an orgy at their house. And so they somebody came to their house for this, and it's like, you know, it was just absurd, and it came out in the news, and there was a legal case about it and all that.
That's where they come after your reputation, right? And
yeah. And the woman said, well, I have a disabled daughter, and so I was really stressed. Well, I feel bad for her having a disabled daughter, but I know a whole lot of people. I've worked with people with disabled kids, and I've never heard of someone do that before. So that's part of the 90%. There's no excuse for that kind of behavior.
All right. What are some other ways besides that to identify? You talk about the web method. That was new to me in this book, a new approach or a new method for recognizing. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and that's a new method. I've written other books before, but this is the first time I put that method, really developed that method and put it in there. So think of it as words, their words, your emotions, and their behavior. And so look for words that show this all or nothing thinking, words that show a preoccupation with blaming others. And you can often read this just from a paragraph in an email.
I will make you suffer. I mean, those
sorts
of, I've seen those emails.
Yeah. And so you take that, and then maybe you find out someone has a history of, you know, bringing lawsuits or something, and you go, uh-oh, you know, this person's used to blaming others. They use these extreme words. So that's words. Then emotions, your emotions. How do you feel around the person? Do you feel afraid? Do you feel extreme things? Do you feel inadequate, humiliated? I remember going home from work one day. I was driving home after work as a therapist, And I was thinking to myself, you know, I'm really a lousy therapist. I'm no good at this. I don't know why I'm you know, I even try. And then I go, wait a minute. Did I have a narcissist in my caseload today? That's right. At 10 o'clock, I had a narcissist. That's why I feel incompetent. It's like if you're feeling incompetent, it's often because you're around someone who's trying to make you feel incompetent, or someone who has mood swings, you know, rages and then really friendly. You say, what did I do to upset this person? This person has a pattern of getting upset. It's nothing that I did. So I feel afraid, or I feel, you know, like I want to strangle the person or something. These are warning signs that you're dealing with a high conflict person. But also, if you feel incredibly sorry for them, some of them are very manipulative. Antisocials make you feel bad for them. Ted Bundy walked around college campuses with his arm or his leg in a cast.
Right.
And that's how he picked up women, that he'd drop his books in front of them and say, can you help me take these to my car? They would take the books to his car, and then he would push them in the car, and then he'd drive off, and he murdered like over 30 women that way. So playing the victim or saying, I'm helpless, take care of me. So how you feel can influence. If you feel swept off your feet and you think, this is the most perfect person I ever met, they're too good to be true. And if they feel too good to be true, they often are. So that's your emotions. Lastly is their behavior, and that's the 90% rule we talked about. But they do things, negative behavior 90% of people wouldn't do. Taking this approach, you can often figure out who's going to give you a really hard time much earlier. I used to think you have to know them for 6 months. No. If you know one thing that 90% of people would never do that they did, there's a good chance that there's a mountain of bad behavior underneath that.
Yeah, because that is often those extreme acting out moments. It seems like in my experiences, those are often just moments where their guard was let down initially and they acted out in some extreme way and then quickly said, uh-oh, I gotta, because that's the manipulation piece. But sometimes it sneaks out almost and trusts those things. And you talk about the gut feeling, right? Is that instinct? Is that like, I don't feel okay here? That could
be. Yeah, we use that.
Yeah.
Yeah, use that. We don't realize how much our emotions can give us warnings about people and how they can throw our emotions off. That's why extreme positive emotion is a warning sign, too. Someone who's super charming, I now treat that as a warning sign. Doesn't mean for sure that they're a high conflict person, but watch out, they could be.
That's
more.
You talked a lot about that in your book, Love Bombing, which that was on Dating Radar. That's what it was.
Right.
The idea of love bombing, of over too much. This, you know, second week, I love you, and you know, that may not be quite accurate. So don't necessarily trust that. We're gonna go. We're going to go to Caroline. You're on line one with Bill Eddy. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much for this program. I understand that just the average person, I think, gets upset during a divorce or some activity that is damaging to the family. And I'm wondering, when people, even people that are not, as you're describing these folks, when they start showing behaviors that they don't normally show because of their anger, what's the impact on their children? I would think that it would be pretty strong.
The key thing is, what's the pattern of behavior? I think children really do suffer if something happens over and over again. And I think it's true, like you mentioned, that in many divorces, people have some bad moments. And I think kids are often aware of those bad moments, even if parents think they don't know, kids often know. But if that's it, I think kids and everybody else, relatives, friends, et cetera, kind of chalk that up to that was a bad moment, and maybe 90% of people have a bad moment. But if there's a pattern, and the high conflict divorces I've worked with, and I've worked with them as a therapist, as a lawyer, and as a mediator, probably over 2,000 divorces, maybe a third of those high conflict divorces. So that's a lot. The ones I see are stuck in conflict more than 2 years. And that's, to me, almost the dividing line. When when I meet somebody and they say, my divorce is still going in court, I say, how long? And they say, we're now in our fifth year.
right.
And I go, all right, there's a problem here. But I want to mention, it's not necessarily both people, and it's not necessarily just one, that it really varies. Some cases have two high conflict people, some just have one, and the other person's just trying to maintain their sanity and protect the kids. So we can't make an assumption about that. But I would guess that there's one, at least one high conflict person in a case that's going more than 2 years in court.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Caroline. I'd like to add to that, Bill, and correct me. I mean, we met around this high conflict divorce stuff and parental alienation. And people in high conflict divorces often use children as tools to manipulate, and the kids get caught in the middle. And what Caroline was asking, you know, that has a significant impact on children long term, being alienated from one parent or another. A regular divorce is a storm, right? It comes up in your life and it's a huge challenge for many people. And like you said, a year in, you're sort of getting over it and you're moving forward, and people, you may not have a huge love for your ex-partner, but you at least can respect them and get along with them to some degree or another after that year or two. But people that just are battling, they've often remarried, Bill, and are still battling and targeting their ex through their children.
Yeah, and that often is a high conflict person because they have a pattern of conflict that escalates and doesn't get resolved. And so the divorce process is, unfortunately, if you're in the court system, it's an adversarial process, kind of a winner and a loser is how people approach it. Although I do a lot of training of judges, and they really try hard not to have winners and losers, but just to make healthy decisions. But the reality is that people just keep it going and keep it going. And the ones, like I said, more than 2 years, there's usually at least one high conflict person there. And it's part of their personality. And in many ways, the children have experienced this behavior maybe since they were born.
Right.
And so it used to be the enemies were outside the family. Now the enemy's the other parent. You mentioned parental alienation, and we see a lot of that. In fact, alienation is increasing. We're seeing more kids resisting going to one of the parents. And I predicted this a long time ago because I said I think that personality, high conflict personalities are increasing in society. And so children absorb all of that. Just think of, you know, when I said the environment is part of personality development, if a child's in an environment that's constant emotional warfare between their parents, that's going to influence their personality development. They're not going to trust people growing up. They're not going to feel safe. And they may learn abusive behaviors because they've watched their parents do that.
And people become objects to use for their ends versus people who have feelings, and that lack of empathy plays in.
Right, and lack of empathy is a key characteristic of narcissistic personality disorder, but it's also characteristic of all of these high-conflict personalities because they're absorbed in themselves,
right. They
lack empathy for others, and the thing about children is that people who are willing to use their children as a tool to negotiate or to win a battle are very hard people. They are not reasonable people. 80 to 90% of people would never do that. So that's a good thing to watch out for.
They don't. But what's one of the things that struck me is even when I'm in one of those high conflict divorces or those sort of I'm doing the parental, some parent guidance or some parental counseling, they really don't seem to believe that they are hurting their children.
Right.
They seem to really believe that the mom or the dad is not good for their kids and that they're the only ones that can provide what they need. So it's not like it almost doesn't seem malicious.
It's defensive. And I agree with you. And I think that they think they're protective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what's sad and frustrating for all these folks is
that's why it's so hard
aggressive.
To change.
Yeah, the aggressive behavior comes from trying to solve a problem. It's just they're doing the opposite of what they need to do. They don't recognize it.
All right. We're at the 40-minute mark in our show, so we'll take our second break of the hour. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSK Anchorage. My guest today is high conflict expert Bill Eddy. Bill is a licensed therapist, an attorney, and a mediator who is trained in dealing well and trains folks all over the world in dealing with high conflict people in a variety of settings. Today, we're discussing his new book, The Five Types of People Who Can Ruin Your Life, and discussing how to identify and keep yourself safe when you're involved in these relationships with high conflict people. If you have a question for Bill or a comment you'd like to share with us, we have about, 12 or so minutes to continue to take phone calls. You can reach us at 550-8433. Or toll free at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us your questions at line1@alaskapublic.org. I'll give you those numbers again in a minute after we return from our break. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. For those of you who are tuning in late, my guest today is high conflict expert Bill Eddy. Bill is a licensed therapist, and he's unique in that he is also an attorney and a mediator who specializes and trains others in dealing with high conflict people. Today we are discussing his new book, The Five Types of People Who Can Ruin Your Life. And we're looking at how to identify and protect yourself when you find yourself engaged with a high-conflict person. If you have a question or a comment, we'll be taking calls for another 10 and 12 minutes or so. You can email us your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us on our local number at 550-8433 or reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, the show repeats tonight at 8. So if you're listening to this on Monday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording and we won't be able to accept phone calls. All right, we have a couple of emails here I want to get to real quick, Bill. Let's see, there are a few of them coming in. So This listener said, I've read some research in the Harvard Business Review article that highly successful CEOs show signs of extreme narcissism. Any thoughts on this? So, Bill, the political environment, presidents, let's say, CEOs, big executives, owners of corporations and sports teams. Like, what are these folks like, men and women?
Well, it comes to the issue of healthy narcissism versus...
healthy narcissism. Most people wouldn't associate health and narcissism together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, narcissism exists on a continuum.
Right.
So we all have a little bit of narcissism. Keeps us going. We fall down. We get up. You get a terrible test score at school and you work harder. You have an accident. You learn to drive more safely. You insult somebody and they, fire you. So you learn, to keep yourself going. Maybe you have a good idea and everyone else thinks it's stupid and you keep following it and it actually turns out successful. So that's present in everybody more or less. The question is, when does it become dysfunctional?
Right.
Narcissistic personality disorder means that the person is stuck, they don't self-reflect, they don't change, they have dysfunctional relationships. So the issue with CEOs, whether it's of a business or of a country, politicians, et cetera, they all are higher on narcissism, and that helps them move forward. The question is it a disorder? It's a disorder when they can't self-adjust, self-reflect, and change. And so I always get a kick out of watching all the political candidates that lose an election and then change and come back to win an election. And I go, okay, that's probably not a narcissistic personality disorder. Then you see somebody who loses an election and they come back and they say they're the greatest, they're the most wonderful, and they lose the next one. And then each time they get fewer and fewer votes and you realize this person doesn't get it. They probably have narcissistic personality disorder. And if 6% of the population, according to the largest study I'm aware of, have this personality disorder, they exist in every profession, including politics, as well as I'm a lawyer, and there are some lawyers. I'm a therapist. There's some therapists.
Yes.
There's accountants. There's plumbers. Mm-hmm. There's ministers that all have this. So it's a continuum question. The key thing is, can they turn it on and off? If they can't, that's a disorder.
All right. We got a couple of phone calls. So let's go. Peggy, you're on line one with Bill Eddy. Go ahead.
Hi. This has been fascinating, but I'm wondering if you have tips for how to deal with high conflict individuals.
Yes. Okay. Great question. Go, Bill.
I'm glad you asked that question. Well, as I wrote in the book, I find it helpful to think of four key things, and I call it the CARS method: connecting, analyzing, responding, and setting limits. So the first thing is, don't engage in an emotional confrontation with them.
Instead, they're
going to be much better at that. So instead, it's almost like judo or jujitsu or something, is give them a statement that shows empathy, attention, or respect. So you say, wow, I see you're having a hard day. You know, I hear your frustration. Let's talk about that. Let's see how you and I can solve this problem. I'll work with you on that. You know, have a nice day. Those kinds of things, even if the person's angry at you, often will calm them down. So connect with them. That's the first thing. Have a sense of it's you and me against the problem, not me against you. The second thing is analyzing, is get them thinking about their choices. If you can, as you can say, you know, you've got a choice here. You could do A or you could do B. If you want to do B, I'll do that with you. If you want to do A, I'm not willing to be part of that.
Right.
But in a matter-of-fact way, tell them what their choices are. And you can turn almost anything into a choice. The third is responding to their misinformation. They usually have distortions in what they're saying. Is say, you may not realize it, but here's some helpful information. And, you know, like maybe they're accusing you of doing something. Yesterday you were making noise, you know, and I couldn't stand it. And you'll say, actually, yesterday I was out of town, so it wouldn't have been me.
Right.
But let's look at what we can do. And the fourth is setting limits. High conflict people don't stop themselves. They keep going with aggressive behavior. And so we need to set limits. You could set, if you're at work, organizational limits where you say, you know, if that continues, you're going to have to be reassigned or you're not going to be able to have that project. But you can also set personal limits and say, you know, I'm not willing to discuss that any further, or I'm not willing to meet tomorrow. Or I need to go now. Have a good day. Goodbye. So connecting, analyzing, responding, and setting limits. That's the CARS method. And of course, I get a lot of examples in the book, The Five Types of People, where you can apply that. So it takes some practice, but it's really, I do it myself. Is someone's just all of a sudden upset with me out of nowhere, and I'm going like, I want to yell at them, but instead I go, oh, let's see, oh, I need to connect and look at the choices, respond, and set limits.
Yeah, and your trainings and your books, the Biff responses, the high conflict people in the workforce, There's been there's divorce, high conflict, divorcing a high conflict person. All those things have been so instrumental in helping me understand that aligning with a narcissist or using their, I mean, I've had a lot of luck with saying, you know, I need your help on this. If I'm going to help your kid, I'm going to need you because you have the power here. They respect you. I mean, really kind of building them up. And I have a lot of luck with buy-in, but you're really, as you said, connecting, aligning yourself with them, which a lot of people can't quite stomach.
Yeah, and let me emphasize that the mistakes people make is that they attack the person back, and so that's not good to do. There's a few other mistakes, so that's an emotional confrontation.
Right.
Also, focusing on the past. By giving them choices, you want to shift the focus to the future. Let's look at what you can do now. Don't get stuck talking about the past because they can do that forever.
Yeah, what are we going to do next?
Yeah, exactly. And don't try to give them insight into themselves. That's one of the big mistakes that people make. They go, well, wait a minute. Can't you see it's your problem and you're making this worse?
Right.
When you do that, if they're a high conflict person, they will attack you more than ever before. And they might spend months or years trying to prove it's all your fault. So don't go there. Skip the insight. Just focus on what to do next. And lastly, don't tell them that they're a high-conflict person or that they have a personality disorder. That never works.
Because that sets up a power struggle and engagement, which you will lose because that will become their obsession, correct?
Absolutely. You're totally right with that.
All right. We got, is it Stephen or Stephen? You've been on the phone for a few minutes. You're on the air with Bill Eddy. Go ahead.
Yes,
Steve?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, this is Stephen out in Palmer. I have a question about if you can address false allegations during a divorce and child custody. Can you address the personalities of people and the rampant abuse of false allegations during divorce and child custody?
Sure.
All right. We'll take your call off the air because you're kind of breaking up. But go ahead, Bill. False allegations. You touch on that pretty extensively in several of your books.
Yeah. I might mention, especially in divorce cases, I have a book called Splitting, Protecting Yourself While Divorcing Someone with Borderline or Narcissistic Personality Disorder. And if someone's really dealing with a high-conflict divorce case, I'd suggest you may want to read that. Helps you deal with the court system as well as a high-conflict co-parent. But false allegations are something that happens a lot with high-conflict people. And partly, some of the time they believe them, and some of the time they know they're false. All five of these personalities I have seen make false allegations at times. I've also seen others who don't do that. But the people that chronically make false allegations, usually one after another, usually have one of these high-conflict personalities, especially narcissistic, borderline, and antisocial, and histrionic. I've seen those with that. The thing is that if you're dealing with that, is to present the accurate information, that every false allegation needs to be met with accurate information. And I've won court cases by lining up the false statements and the truth of what's really happening. And sometimes it takes testimony, sometimes it takes, you know, gathering data, gathering documents. They say the doctor said this, so you get the doctor's records and find out, no, they said the opposite. So in high conflict situations anywhere, you see that in business and families and politics, et cetera, you need to respond with the accurate information. I've actually consulted with a couple politicians who were wondering, do I or don't I respond to absurd allegations? And what I say is you always have to respond with the accurate information, but very briefly, what I call a BIF response, that you're brief, informative, friendly, and firm, and you're done. So you don't get defensive and draw it out very long.
Yeah, I mean, a great example of that is feedback I, you know, got from a listener one time, and I wrote this long email explaining, you know, all my credentials and everything, and then my station manager just said, thank you for your feedback. She said, how about this? Thank you for your feedback. We take listener comments very important, you know, and I was like, okay, That works.
Exactly.
Instead of all my defending and explaining and, you know, it's much more effective, brief, informative, you know, firm and friendly, right? That's the the Biff response.
Yep.
I got an email here that I want to read real quick. It says, good afternoon. This is from Glenn Kravitz, who's been a guest on the show. You probably have met him, Bill. You may not know his name, but he's a local mediator and lawyer. I am a local mediator and lawyer who uses Bill Eddy's techniques in high conflict divorces and workplace disputes. I've trained with Bill Eddy and his partner. This is excellent and useful material. Thanks for your work, Bill, and thank you, Prentice. I've enjoyed being a guest on the program in the past. So Glenn's given a shout out to you and to this information, which has been really, really helpful for me professionally. I think the best piece of advice I ever got from you is if you're feeling, you know, how do you know if you've been in the room with a narcissist or antisocial is if you feel really inadequate or like you're terrible at your job. And that's been very helpful for me. So that's good stuff from Glenn. This is important work that you're doing. So thank you.
Thanks, Glenn. And actually, it makes me think of a couple other brief things if there's time.
Sure. Go ahead. We just got a minute.
Yeah. It's good to be able to remind yourself of these phrases. And one of them I find the most helpful for me is, it's not about me. And I think the example you gave, Prentice, about the long email response is, it's not about you, so you don't have to defend yourself.
Right.
And when you get defensive, you often feed the emotions of the conflict. So remember, for everybody, it's not about you. High conflict people are carrying this inside them, and it's their own distress. Don't have to defend yourself. Another is, you're not responsible for their behavior. They often blame you and say, see what you made me do. You don't have to defend that because you don't make other people do what they do. It's up to them. It's their bodies, their hands, their feet. So don't accept that. Often the issue's not the issue. High conflict people are angry and upset about something, you're busy going, well, why is that so important? And it's not because of the issue. It's because they're stuck in conflict and anger and things like that. And a couple more are, it's up to you. Tell people it's up to you. You have a choice. Like, they're giving you a hard time. You say, if you keep talking this way, I'm going to have to hang up. But if you'll talk more respectfully, I'll keep listening. It's up to you.
That's the limit.
So that way, you give it back to them. So that's the basic idea, is don't take it on.
All right. We got a lot more that we could cover, but unfortunately, we are wrapping up towards the end of our show. So any last thoughts, Bill? Just real 10 seconds.
Just, there's a lot of information. I've got books, highconflictinstitute.com. I've got a lot of video training articles. Also, I have a Psychology Today blog. So psychologytoday.com, look up Bill Eddy's blog.
And go to the High Institute or highconflictinstitute.com. That's a great source of information. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Prentice.
All right. Next week, Dr. Butler will be back. I'm not sure who his guest is, but that's next Monday, June 25th at 2, repeating at 8 on FM 91.1 Alaska Public Media. If you want to check out the resources on today's show, go to line1 at alaskapublic.org, and you can check out all the stuff we have there from Bill's website, but that's a great place to start. Eric Borka is our web editor. And Dave Waldron was our audio engineer. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.